Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
My special guest today is Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for Enterprise Services Integration at NASA, and NASA CIO Linda Cureton. Gary, Linda, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, Gary, I want to start with you first and start with I3P, big program, a lot of interest around the community, both inside the government and outside the government. There was four contracts so far, I think, that have been awarded, or at least are in the process you guys are looking at. Give me a status update. Let's start with the ones that have been awarded, and I know you guys are making some news in early February with a draft RFI.
Our end-user services contract, ACES, was awarded to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Services and began operation on November 1st, back in 2011. And they started at Goddard-Dryden headquarters and Kennedy Space Center. And more recently, in January, they started at Marshall Space Flight Center, Glenn Research Center, Stennis, and the NSSC. And, of course, coming up, we've got three more centers, Ames, Langley, and Johnson, that will be coming on board in March. Relative to networks and communication services, the NICS contract was awarded to SAIC. And they began services back in June 2011 at Dryden and Goddard, as well as the WAN, and then they've been picking up the other centers along the way, and we should be fully implemented there April 2012. The Enterprise Application Support Contract East, that was also awarded to SAIC, and they began services February 1st, 2011. So they've been on board about a year, and that contract is going pretty well. And you had mentioned West. There was RFI issued in early February to get industry comments on our new approach, and we're very excited about moving out on that procurement. And then, of course, central to all of those services is the Enterprise Service Desk and the service request system that's run out of the NSSC down in Mississippi. That provides Tier 0, Tier 1 support to the customers and provides one stop for service request. And then also down at the NSSC, we have the I3P business office that is coordinating invoicing and payment and metrics and things of that nature.
So a lot of different programs all going on. Let me back up for a second, talk about the West contract, the RFI that was released in early February. Give me a sense of what you guys are putting out there for, what are you guys looking for? And this was a contract as well that was put out initially. You guys pulled it back and decided to rethink it. Give me a sense about that.
OMB has put out the edict to go cloud first. And so in this case, we're looking to use cloud services for hosting of our public websites and other external web apps. And West would provide the infrastructure and platform and software services for those needs. So we're just getting the industry comments on the approach and the particulars of the RFP right now.
Is there a time frame you'd like to get this out by yet, or is because you're just in the draft RFI stage, it's going to be a while?
We're still pulling together a procurement schedule on this. A lot of it's going to depend on the extent of comments we get from industry, but certainly we'd like to have something in place within a year.
Linda, let me shift over to you a little bit. Cloud first is something you're a big fan of. Obviously, you've done a lot with cloud. How does West and the ideas behind West fit into the broader strategy around cloud and NASA?
Well, one of the things that changed from when we first put the procurement out on the street, there were many, many advances out there in the commercial space. I heard a lot of things about what Amazon's doing, what Google's doing, and what Microsoft is doing. And all those advances, I think, warranted us to pause and look at how we could get more economy, more bang for the buck, using some of the alternatives that were presented to us. So we think that it addresses the cloud, look at cloud first, but the real issue is that it's a big benefit for us. It's not just a compliance issue. It's an ability to do that and have NASA focus more on the content and the information rather than on delivering the infrastructure.
And I know we'll talk more about cloud later, Nebula, some other cloud priorities. Let me shift back to I3P and Gary for a second. ACES and East are the two contracts I think that are furthest along. Give me a sense, are you starting to see some benefits from those two contracts?
Certainly, ACES, we're in a hybrid environment right now where we're trying to migrate out of the legacy ODIN systems and hardware into the new ACES environment. But As that comes up, you know, users are getting daily backup services and 8-hour return to service. And over time, we're implementing data at rest more broadly, a little better approach and solution there. So I think there are benefits there. You know, probably the biggest benefit, too, is, you know, we've been without refreshes for quite a while heading into this. So now users are getting the new hardware, and it's pretty robust and well-configured. We've got our gold build on that, which is, you know, Windows 7 and Office 2010. You know, so things are coming up to the latest standards. East is coming along pretty well. We switched from a cost-plus environment to firm fixed price, and not sure going into that how it was going to work, but I think it's working out pretty well. We're getting through the application and maintenance point system, and folks are understanding it better, and we're getting things normalized there. So one good thing that it does for us is allows more insight and granularity into what it costs to support particular applications. So, you know, as the budget environment, you know, becomes more constrained, I think we'll be able to make better decisions about which applications we support and to what extent.
You mentioned a tech refresh. One of the things that I'm hearing a lot of CIOs talk about is mobile, and I think we probably will address that later with Linda a little bit, but from an ACES East standpoint, when it comes to mobile, is that a big part of these contracts? Meaning, are you, instead of maybe giving everyone desktops, but you're going to maybe go to laptops, or is that an option, or is there tablet computers as part of that availability for certain employees?
Yeah, sure. There is a whole range of options. There's iPhones, iPads, Blackberries, laptops, you know, desktops, et cetera. We don't necessarily mandate what folks use. The S seat is kind of the standard and should support the majority of users, but we do have a pretty you know, technical set of users, science and engineering. So we can get higher-end equipment there. But the iPads, you know, smartphones, et cetera, are easy to get, and there's a whole array of options, AT&T, Verizon, whatever providers they need in order to support that.
Linda, your thoughts?
One of the things that I wanted to add is that we are realizing that our customers really are more mobile, and they do things at home, they do things wherever. We're looking to identify what is the technology needed to support a more teleworking type environment and things like that. It's not that easy, but then it's not as hard as we make it a lot of times. And looking at all those things, we think that we're going to be able to provide a very good offering for our end users. One of the things that I wanted to add that East is doing in the mobile framework is adding, they've added an apps store to start to put some of these new applications out there and making applications more location agnostic, so to speak, and device agnostic, so that we are able to widen that diversity that we provide support for.
You mentioned a couple of key things there: telework, app store, mobility. Was that part of the thought process as these contracts were putting in place, make things easier to go in those directions? I mean, I know these contracts take years to put in place, so mobility really has become larger in the last year or two. But is that maybe a peripheral benefit to these contracts?
One of the things that I did now, I guess it's 2.5 years ago when I first became NASA CIO, is I kind of put them all on hold, all the procurements, and did a review of them. And so for ACES and East in particular, for ACES, I wanted the ability to do anytime, any place, anywhere. That was sort of the vision for how that needed to go. Manage diversity anytime, any place, anywhere. And for East, for application development, to inject more innovation in it. So both of those changes has given us that leg up in anticipating the changes that will happen. I mean, it's going to happen. And it happens faster than we can plan for. We might as well have a very flexible contract in order to serve that up.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about I3P. I do have to say, Linda, 2.5 years as NASA CIO. Time flies too quickly sometimes. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guests today are Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for NASA, and Linda Cureton, the NASA CIO.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests.
Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. Oh, it's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guests today are Linda Cureton, the NASA CIO, and Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for NASA's Enterprise Services and Integration. Now, Gary, before break, we're catching up on the I3P program, a big IT refresh program, infrastructure program at NASA. One of the things that a lot of people talk about when they go to these big contracts and they start changing the way they buy things is cost savings. A lot of pressure on efficiencies around government. Give me a sense. Are you starting to see some of those cost savings, some of those efficiency gains through these contracts, or is it still too early?
Well, I don't think it's too early at all. Under ACES, the fixed seat prices are lower. I think we've projected it's about 22% savings that we'll see over the course of a year. And catalog items, we get a 30% discount off of the catalog, which is pretty expansive under ACES. So users should see that. The thing that makes it hard to capture actual savings is just the way all of the services were bundled before, and now they're in different buckets. So by the time you do all of that segregation, it's hard to get to one answer on what the savings are. But for sure, through competition and scrubbing our requirements, I think that we've gotten a very good deal for NASA. Certainly better than what we've paid in the past.
Linda, is there pressure on NASA, just like all agencies around budget, to even squeeze out more savings from contracts like this, if you will, back office type contracts?
A lot of pressure, because even considering what Gary just talked about, that's fine. But then we're going to be required to save even more. Now that we've gotten the unit cost down, how can we get economy of scale or something like that? So there is a continuous pressure to drive costs down, while at the same time the requirements are going up and the expectations are going up. And looking at consumerism, I think consumerism drives that need for economy along with the need for a lot of services. People expect more, and they can't afford cheap. That's what it is. But they don't want to pay a lot for it. So we are in that conundrum. But that really is an occupational hazard of a CIO.
And probably one of the best parts, too, I imagine, right?
Oh, the best part.
Gary, let me shift over. Another contract that maybe is going to be a little further down the road to seeing some of those benefits, some of those cost savings benefits, is the NICS contract. That was an award NASA made about 6 months ago. Just tell us a little bit about that award. And then what are you starting to see? When do you expect to see some change happening from that contract?
Sure. NICS is our NASA Integrated Communication Services contract. So we're looking to pull together an end-to-end network environment for NASA's mission and mission support organizations. Even though it's relatively new, we have seen some benefits there. We've consolidated maintenance agreements, and we've gotten better pricing there than in the past. And we also now have a single incident tracking system, a single service order request or service fulfillment system for networks and communications. So, you know, we think that improves the management of the network and responsiveness to the customers. But as you said, it's going to take a while. Right now, we're really focused on catching the services at each of the centers, picking up their local area network and in some cases, telecommunications and cable plant services, making sure that we don't drop any of those. And then we'll be looking to put in place a consolidated network operations center and a common agency VPN solution and some other transformation initiatives.
You mentioned a single incident tracking system. Now, when I think of that, I think of cybersecurity, but I want to clarify, are you talking about cyber, or are you talking more like an incident, like there's a problem with the server or a problem with a port or something to that effect?
Yeah, it's mostly around the service. And, you know, we have the SOC already in place, so they're managing security incidents. But, you know, one good thing that NICS does for us is gives us one organization that's interacting with the SOC relative to a lot of the network vulnerabilities and incidents.
Linda?
I want to add, relative to security, one of the things that our Deputy CIO for IT Security, Valerie Burks, wants to do is to look at perhaps the possibility of more collaboration with the NICS group and how we can watch our perimeter better than we have and still continue to raise the bar to meet the threat that keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So we'll probably be looking at some of that when NICS stabilizes and we get our strategy for security completely vetted.
And actually, that led me to the other question. I know a lot of times security is part of all of these contracts. It can't be, as we've heard so many times, bolted on. But is there a separate security contract or cyber services contract that you guys have in place or are looking at? And then you kind of piqued my interest a little bit with the cyber strategy. Is there something going on there?
One of the biggest things to improve IT security is to improve how you manage IT. And the thing that the I3P program does is improves our overall ability to manage IT as an enterprise, as at the agency. And so with an organization like NASA, you have to say, well, what is an enterprise? There are lots of enterprises. And so it's looking at a more centralized way of doing things, of managing things, of understanding our environment and being having the situational awareness that you need from a cybersecurity perspective. Now, as far as our strategy goes, what we're doing is we're looking at what are the strengths that we currently have, because we've come a long way, and what are the challenges that we face considering what our constrained budget is. How can, within this budget, we get the most bang for our buck and climb the Herculean task of facing the threat, which is always changing. So once you think you've got it, it changes, you know, like the Borg. You know, you think you got them, and then they adapt. And that security threat is just like that. It adapts constantly. And so we need to have an adaptable strategy to deal with it, too.
And I know later, again, we're going to talk a little bit about how you guys are using your HSPD-12, your PIV cards, to help with that security strategy. So let me jump back to Gary for a second. You also have another contract that a lot of vendors are very, very interested in, the data center contract, another one that Linda and you guys pulled back, decided, and then you're still dealing with your strategy. Can you give me an update on that contract and how does cloud computing and all that fit together?
I'd say that's probably in suspended animation. When Linda came on board and did the review of all of the I3P contracts, I think wisely she recognized that particular one put us at considerable risk with, you know, all of the touch points and what we were trying to do, and I think it was a bridge too far. So I think right now our strategy is more about having a reliable data center locally to each NASA center, and then, you know, having some specialized data centers for some of the mission requirements. There's a lot of earth science data and high-end computing and things of that nature and mission-related data centers. And so we are consolidating, but certainly we're not going to get down to one or probably even two. And we're going to have to use a life cycle approach to do that. I think the budget is going to dictate, you know, rather than investing millions of dollars into doing this, that it's going to happen over time as things wear out and we replace things, buildings need renovation, you know, we'll consolidate and pull things together into that environment of one local to each NASA center and then some of the highly specialized data centers.
Linda, let me shift to you. The data center consolidation plan, every agency's got to put one together. How does that plan that you guys put together fit in with this idea about the data center contract that was canceled? Meaning, how's your thinking evolved?
Just because the contract canceled didn't mean that we didn't do any work. Most of the work has been at centers. And so there are local center contracts that are in place that can handle almost all of what we need from that perspective. One of the things that we've done from an agency perspective is to look at the low-hanging fruit of cost savings, which is in power and utilities. So we've had a very creative project that's been led by Karen Petraska, who works for Gary, one of Gary's service executives. And that's been able to help us measure and monitor some of the benefits that we've seen from the consolidation that's going on. The other thing that we found is that we can get a great benefit, not just by consolidating, but modernizing. Using newer equipment, which uses less energy, has saved us a significant amount of money. One of the problems, and this is a CIO problem, is that the money gets saved in somebody else's budget somewhere. It's buried in the facilities budget, under utilities, under overhead. So there's no line item associated with the savings. It's just that continuous kind of cost efficiency that we've got to come up with over time.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk maybe more broadly about some of your priorities. Linda, Gary, we'll also talk more about the I3P program. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guests today are Linda Cureton, the NASA CIO, and Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for NASA.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
Do you have these in a 7.5?
How's that cooked?
Can I get that shipped overnight?
Is there a direct flight?
How long does the warranty last?
What's your soup of the day?
How do you change the ringtone?
Does it come in blue?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life.
Is it raining out?
What time's the meeting?
How much does this cost?
Does it have four-wheel drive?
Have we met before?
What's my account balance?
Yet somehow, when we get to the doctor's office...
Any questions?
No.
We clam up. Ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
When do I get my results?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guests today are Linda Cureton, the NASA CIO, and Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for Enterprise Services and Integration. Now, before a break, we talked a lot about the I3P program. Linda, let me shift a little bit. Let's talk more about other priorities. I know I3P is huge, but what else are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
I mentioned security earlier, and that is absolutely very important. Our Deputy CIO for IT Security, Valerie Burks, is conducting an analysis of our strengths and weaknesses, opportunity threats across all the centers, and using that to develop a roadmap about how to better use the resources that are already deployed and how to manage the risk much better than what we have. And so she's in the process of doing that, in the process of rallying the troops agency-wide in order to do that. Another priority is in the area of innovation, I would say. Sometimes innovation gets a bad rap, especially when budgets are tight. You think, oh, well, gosh, how can you afford to spend money on those bright, new, shiny things? It's just ride this old car till it drops, that kind of thing. But innovation gives us the ability to do things more economically by doing things in a different way and being able to save money by doing it. So across the agency, we have aging PBX systems. So our new Chief Technology Officer for IT, Dr. Sashi Pillay, is currently looking at innovative ways to meet the telecommunications needs voice-wise without having to make a huge investment in voice systems. So there are cloud solutions there and a lot of capability in what's coming out in cellular, that kind of thing. And so if we can take advantage of that, then we will not have to make that capital investment in PBX systems.
So is this more than just voice over IP, for instance? Is this could be voice in the cloud?
Yes, it could be. Voice as a service.
That'd be fascinating. How far along are you into that? Is it just very early on?
Very early on. Kind of like looking at the landscape, looking at products. And, you know, the one thing about this is that the field matures faster than our budget and planning cycles. So we might plan now in fiscal year 14 to do something, but this could change four times between now and then. So we want a flexible type approach so we can take advantage of some of these opportunities as they come up. And voice as a service is one of them because that's really coming out very fast.
I want to jump back for a second. The voice as a service is fascinating, but you also mentioned that you guys are doing a cyber SWOT, if you will. Strength, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Give me a sense of what you hope to get out of that. Is that just a relook at all of your cyber initiatives?
Yeah, I'll just give you some examples that might be more instructive. We probably have every security tool known to man and God. And so And looking at all of them, they cover, it would be like a Venn diagram of capabilities that are provided. So if we look at the intersection of all those Venn diagrams, maybe we don't need all these tools, and we can just focus on a few of them and take the money and reinvest it in something else. So one of the pieces of analysis is looking at the tools. Another example is with forensics. It takes us so long to analyze data to understand the threat. By the time we understand it, the actor has done the damage already. So we need the ability to step up the pace in terms of our ability to do forensics. And that's having skilled staff ready who can do it and do it fast, not to take months to do it, but to do it within hours. And we're not there yet, but that's one of the things that we need to go. And then the final example I'll make is the amount of data that's needed to do the analysis. We have to store a lot of data so that we can do the analysis, do the forensics, understand and comprehend what's happened over time. So storing the data in a usable format is something that we're looking at also.
You mentioned something about understanding what's happening on your network. I can only think of continuous monitoring, an OMB mandate, something every agency is looking at. How does that all fit into what you're trying to do, the continuous monitoring requirement?
Yeah, so that's definitely absolutely important. And I think that we realized that early and really appreciated that kind of focus and getting us more away from the check-the-box compliance orientation. Because I think that with that check-the-box orientation, we get ourselves into this fallacy of thinking, yes, we are secure. We've got our good housekeeping seal of approval. We're there. And the reality is that we're never there, and we have to always be vigilant and watchful of that, and continuous monitoring will get us there. The thing where we intersect with NICS is that NICS will get us in a position where we're able to have a uniform management of our network infrastructure. The wide area networks are pretty much managed in a homogeneous way, but the local area networks are managed every which way. And the NICS contract will start to capture what we're doing first, and then once they catch it, then they will implement more consistent procedures, firewall management rule sets, and all that kind of stuff, so we can get to that point. So NICS is going to enable that.
Sounds like we could talk about this much, much longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. But we'll have you both come back on another time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guests today were Linda Cureton, the NASA CIO, and Gary Cox, the Associate CIO for Enterprise Services and Integration. Linda, Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.